the look, with just the longing in his pale eyes. He leaned down and kissed her, his lips warm and tasting of whiskey.
"My God, I want you, Ellen," he whispered.
"I can't. The case..."
"This has nothing to do with the case."
Sliding a hand into her hair, he undid the clip that held it back. It fell free around her shoulders.
"This is just us,"
he murmured, pressing a kiss to her temple.
"It's just... I need... to touch you. Let me touch you, Ellen."
His vulnerability touched her. The yearning in his smoky voice touched her. The attraction that had sparked inside her from the first flared up as hot and bright as the flames of the fire. He was nothing she had been looking for. She wasn't a woman given to fits of passion. She didn't lower her guard. But even as his lips brushed her cheek, she could feel logic slipping away. She made one last half-hearted reach for it, drawing a breath for the voice of reason. Jay seemed to sense the words before she could form them. He touched a forefinger to her lips.
"Don't think," he whispered. "Not tonight. Please."
Please. They could have this night, cross this line. There would be no going back. There would likely be regrets, but those were in the gray mists of the future, and they didn't outweigh the need to connect, to touch, to shut out the rest of the world for a few hours. Ellen closed her eyes as he framed her face in his hands and kissed her again deeper, slower. She let her mouth open beneath the pressure of his, allowed him access, shivered as he took it. He drew her away from the wall. Her coat fell to the floor. She slid her hands up the front of his shirt and brought them back down, parting the buttons from their moorings. Impatient for the feel of her hands on his skin, he slipped the shirt off and tossed it aside, pulled his dark t-shirt off over his head and flung it away. The firelight played over the ridges and planes of muscle in his chest. His shoulders were broad, in the way of a man who did physical work. Ellen touched her fingertips to his belly, felt the muscles quiver beneath the tight bandage that bound his ribs.
"Will this be all right?" she asked. "You won't hurt?"
"That's not where I hurt," he whispered.
Curling his fingers around her wrist, he raised her hand and pressed it over his heart. The honesty of the gesture surprised her. She spread her fingers and felt his heartbeat. He was just a man, and he hurt, and he wanted this time with her to escape that pain. She hurt in her own way, for her own reasons. She wanted the same escape. It was as simple and as complicated as that. Leaning into him, she pressed a kiss where her hand had rested. Then Jay's mouth was on hers again, hotter, hungrier. They sank to their knees together. His fingers stumbled down the line of buttons on her blouse. He pushed the blouse and her cardigan off her shoulders without completing the task. The need to see her, to taste her, too urgent. She hadn't bothered with a bra. Her breasts were there for the taking, the color of cream, the texture of silk, a size that filled his palms perfectly. He cupped them together, rubbing his thumbs across the rosy buds at their center, the need snapping inside him like a whip as they hardened beneath his touch. Bending her back over his arm, he lowered his head to take one tightened peek between his lips. The sensation was electric. A gasp caught in Ellen's throat. She clutched at his shoulders, then his head, raking her fingers through his short hair, pulling him tighter against her. The need for this act, for this man, burned within, wild, hot, too intense. She had never known what it was to let go of her self-control completely, but she felt it sliding away from her now. The feeling was terrifying and exhilarating at once. He lifted his head and looked at her, his lower lip slick and shining, the pupils of his eyes huge, ringed with neon blue. He looked uncivilized, as if the same fire in her had seared away the thin veneer of manners he wore in public, revealing what she had sensed all along was at the core of him, something dangerous, untamed, raw. He moved away from her for a moment, and the sudden absence of his body heat left her feeling cold. She pulled her blouse together over her breasts as she watched him snatch the thick down sleeping bag from the cot and spread it open in front of the fireplace. Then he offered her his hand. She stood, passive, as he undressed her. He freed her arms from the blouse and sweater, caressing her shoulders, her back, her belly. He hooked his thumbs in the waistband of the leggings she wore and drew them slowly down her hips, kneeling at her feet to remove them. All thoughts of being cold vaporized as he reached up and inched her silk panties down, following their descent with his mouth. He pressed a hot, open-mouthed kiss to the soft spot below her navel as he slid his hands around to cup her buttocks, then dragged the kiss lower to the tender area just above the delta of dark blonde curls. Then lower. Ellen gasped at the touch of his lips, at the bold probing of his tongue. She tried to step back, but he held her easily, his fingers stroking, kneading, pulling her closer, tilting her hips into the shocking intimacy of his kiss. The intensity of the pleasure stunned her, scared her, swept her toward a towering precipice, and left her hanging there. An involuntary whimper of frustration escaped her as Jay pulled her down to the floor with him and pulled her hard against him. He shared the taste of her own desire with her. She ran her hands along the taut muscles of his back, his arms, feeling his strength. His urgency seemed to feed her own. When he rose on his knees to unfasten his trousers, she rose with him, pushed his hands away from his belt and unbuckled it herself. Her fingers trembled as she unbuttoned his khakis and eased the zipper down. She touched him through the fine silk of his boxers, savored the feel of his hardness beneath the whisper softness of the fabric. Jay tolerated her delicate teasing with gritted teeth, holding on to his control until he could stand it no longer. He wanted her, needed more than the tentative feather touches she was giving him.
"Jesus, Ellen, touch me,"
he rasped, closing her hand around his shaft, guiding it slowly up and down the length of him.
"Feel what you do to me, how much I want you."
A sense of feminine power swelling inside her, Ellen followed his commands, savoring the feel of him in her hand. Hot, hard, thick, pulsing. She traced her fingertips over the tip of him and found a spot that made him suck his breath in through his teeth. With his hand still curved over hers, she reached down and cupped him, and a shudder rippled through his whole body. He drew away just long enough to shuck his pants and fish a condom out of his wallet. He came back to her ready, eager, the muscles in his arms trembling as he braced himself over her. She arched up to meet him. Her eyes drifted shut as he entered her. Her body tightened around him like a fist.
"Sweet heaven,"
he groaned, fighting the instinctive urge to possess, to bury himself in a single stroke.
"Relax for me, sweetheart,"
he whispered, slowly drawing her leg up along his thigh. He slid a hand beneath her hip and lifted her into him, allowing himself to sink deeper, closer to oblivion. She caught her breath, then let go a sigh of pure, sensual pleasure. Slowly, erotically, they moved together, without words, the glow of the fire gilding their bodies. Ellen let go of the self-restraint that was so much a part of her, shivering inside at the idea of her own vulnerability. Jay felt as if his soul were just an inch from hers, straining to connect in a way that was primal, more than physical, deeper than anything he'd known in a long time. More than he'd bargained for in coming to this place. He had meant to lose himself. Now he wanted nothing more than to hold on to this moment, this night, this woman. The idea scared the hell out of him. Then, they were both beyond thought. There was only need and urgency, a rush to an explosion of bliss. Ellen cried out as her climax came in wave upon wave. She held Jay tight as he came just after her. Even as the tension began to ease out of his body, she held him, suddenly afraid of what she would feel when she let go. Alone. Odd. When she had always felt comfortable with herself, self-sufficient, self-reliant, capable of sharing a relationship or going her own way. She had never defined herself in relation to her status with a man. It was the case, she supposed. She had been feeling the weight of it pressing down on her like a pile of stones. For just a while, she had felt the burden lift. For the time, she could lie here next to Brooks, with his arms around her.
She felt safe.
Safe. With a man she barely knew and barely trusted. At 4:06 a.m., an explosion rocked Dinkytown. The blast shattered windows up and down one block, including all the windows in the Playmore ballroom. At 4:08, Alvin Underbakke called 911 to report the incident and request the fire department come and put out the blaze that was engulfing a big white Cadillac across the street from his house.
Chapter 27.
"Where were you at 4 this morning?" Mitch asked, his hands braced on the back of the chair he should have been sitting in. Tyrell Mann met his gaze with arrogance.
"Getting my beauty Z's. What'd you want me to be, chief? What you trying to pin on my black ass?"
"Let's get something straight here, Tyrell," he said. "I don't give a shit what color your ass is, or any other part of you, and frankly, I'm about ready to take that chip off your shoulder and put it where the sun don't shine. All I care about here is getting a straight answer. Where were you?"
"Like I said, asleep. We went to the party for the doc, then crashed.
At the hostel on campus?"
"Whatever."
Mitch straightened away from the chair and advanced toward him.
"Yeah, at the hostel." Tyrell gave in.
"Why?"
"Someone blew up Ms. North's car this morning."
A nasty smile split Tyrell's features.
"Was the bitch in it?"
Mitch leaned down into his face.
"You know, Tyrell, it's that attitude that's going to land your ass in jail for the rest of your life one of these days. I thought you had to have some brains to get into the Cowboys."
"I got brains enough to know I can have a lawyer here if I want one."
"Why should you need a lawyer, Tyrell? You're not under arrest. Should you be?"
"Fuck you, Halt."
Ellen watched the exchange from the hall, where a one-way mirror gave a 30-inch view of the show. The chances of one cowboy giving up another were nil. The chances of their being tripped up in their story was slim. No one was going to get anything out of Tyrell. Down the hall, Agent Wilhelm and J.R. Anderson were going through the same song and dance. Anderson played innocent, false concern oozing out of him like sap. If one of the cowboys had torched the Cadillac, it was going to take an eyewitness to finger him, and people in Deer Lake were in their beds at 4 o'clock on a Sunday morning. No one had seen anything. No one had seen Tyrell Mann, or J.R. Anderson, or Speed Dawkins, or Todd Childs, or anyone else. They were wasting their time. Again. Ellen wondered if Garrett Wright was home right now browsing the Sunday Star Tribune, smiling to himself. She checked her watch and shook her head. They were due at the psychiatrist's at 4. She needed to call Cameron to let him know to pick her up at the law enforcement center. She wasn't looking forward to the hour-long drive. Cameron would no doubt have as many questions for her as the reporters who were stationed outside the building waiting. News of the car fire had come to her at Jay's house via her beeper. He had driven her to the scene, raising a few eyebrows among the cops hanging around. Luckily, by then, the reporters had already come and gone. Unluckily, they had gone in search of her. Rumor that the charred wreck might have been hers had sent them off in full cry. By the time they found her, they were foaming at the mouth, rabid for answers. She offered them none. Brooks shucked off their interest in him with the explanation that the explosion had damn near rolled him out of bed. That the only explosion either of them had paid any attention to was of a sexual nature was nobody's damn business. But the reporters would make it their business, and Ellen knew it. She had watched it happen to Mitch and Megan, and if they chose to do so with her and Brooks, how long would it be before they jumped onto the fact that Costello and Brooks were fellow Purdue alums, or that Brooks had been seen slapping shoulders with Costello at the benefit? The media had the power to turn a trial into a circus, complete with sideshows. She didn't want to see that happen for the sake of Hannah and Josh, or for her own sake, for that matter. She pushed through the door into the squad room and headed for an empty desk. Christopher Priest rose from the chair, where he had been left waiting, fury rouging his pale cheeks.
"This is an outrage, Ms. North. How much longer are the boys going to be interrogated without the benefit of counsel?"
"They aren't being interrogated, Professor. They're being questioned."
"I've called an attorney."
"You have that right.
I've told you the boys didn't have anything to do with this. They were at the hostel. I checked on them."
"So you said. at about 4 a.m. Quite a coincidence. His glare took on a sharpness Ellen felt like the blade of a razor, though he didn't raise his voice a decibel. I resent the implication. First you take me to task for not supervising them closely enough. Now you call me a liar when I do check up on them.
I didn't call you a liar, Professor, she said calmly. I said it was an extraordinary coincidence. Just like Tyrell and Anderson and Dawkins being seen in the vicinity of my car last night, then the cars being disabled and subsequently blown to Kingdom Come.
They're easy scapegoats, Priest began.
No, nothing about any of this is easy. I know you've got a vested interest in their innocence, Professor, but somebody has to be guilty. And it just might be your boys.
She picked up the telephone receiver, but pressed the plunger down with her finger, eyeing Priest curiously.
As long as we're standing here, Professor, can you tell me if you were with anyone last Saturday afternoon, after your lunch with your friend from Gustavus?
The fury in his eyes was the strongest emotion she'd seen in him, yet he contained it.
You're making enemies, Ms. North, he said quietly. You'll wish you hadn't.
The Taker had warned him this would happen. Josh sat in the cushy blue chair in Dr. Freeman's office, staring past her to the fish tank that was stuck into the wall. He had been told someone would try to get inside his mind and open all the doors. He had been told never to let that happen. He knew how to do that. It was stupid simple. He imagined his body as just a shell and drew his self inward, like a ghost, into his mind, where he shut the doors and windows tight. It didn't make him happy to do this. At first, he had thought of this place in his mind as a special, safe place. But he didn't like all the things the Taker had put there. They made him sad. They scared him. They made his tummy feel weird. But he had been warned, and he was afraid to disobey. Too many bad things had happened already. He didn't like the way any of the grown-ups around him were acting. It had been a relief to come to Dr. Freeman's today. She was a pretty lady with dark brown skin and a kind smile. She usually just talked to him, real easy-like. She asked him questions, but not the same way the cops had asked him questions. She never got that tone in her voice, as if she wanted to shake him, or that tone that made him think she was almost afraid of him. She never seemed to mind when he didn't answer her. But then today, she started talking about relaxing and asking him if he had ever played like he was hypnotized. Bingo. She wanted to hypnotize him. Just another trick to try to get him to say the things the Taker had warned him not to. Josh gave Dr. Freeman a look of huge disappointment, got up from the chair, and went to stare at the fish, trapped inside that tank, the same way he had to stay trapped inside his mind. Watching on the other side of a one-way mirror, Hannah pressed ice-cold hands to her cheeks and willed herself not to cry. Mitch gave her shoulder a sympathetic squeeze. Agent Wilhelm blew out a sigh of frustration. Ellen North exchanged looks with Cameron Reed.
"It's too soon, I suppose," Ellen said.
Wilhelm grunted. "It might be too late for Dustin Holloman." Rage twisted inside Hannah. It wrenched her out of Mitch's grasp and launched her at the BCA agent.
"Don't you dare blame Josh!"
she snarled, hitting him before Mitch could pull her back.
"He's just a little boy. It's not his fault you can't do your job. It's not his fault the world is crawling with scum like Garrett Wright."
Hannah clawed Mitch's arm to pry it away from her, the fury burning inside her. It terrified her, but she couldn't begin to suppress it. It was like acid in her chest, like blood pumping from an artery that had been severed.
"Let me go!" she shouted.
Ellen stepped forward, putting herself in front of Wilhelm. "Hannah, please calm down," she said quietly. "We don't blame Josh."
"I'm taking him home," Hannah declared.
The decision was made without the usual mental weighing of pros and cons. It blurted out of her, this voice of instinct, now that the layers of education, domestication, socialization had been slashed and torn apart. She no longer cared what anyone thought. She knew she no longer bore any resemblance to the woman of the year image everyone in town had of her, and she didn't give a damn. All she cared about now was Josh, protecting him. fighting to get him the justice he deserved, fighting to protect him.
"I'm taking my son home," she said again, looking over her shoulder at Mitch, who had brought them up in his Explorer.
"I'm sorry it didn't work out, Hannah, but we had to give it a try, for Josh's sake as well as our own."
"No," she murmured, as his hold on her arm relaxed and she stepped away from him. "None of this has been for Josh's benefit. Don't you realize that, Mitch? Nothing that happens now can change what Garrett Wright did to him, or to our family. Nothing. Ever. The only thing we can hope for is revenge."
She walked out of the room, heading toward Dr. Freeman's office. At the door, she straightened her burgundy sweater and pushed her hair back over her shoulder. Then she knocked once and let herself in.
"Josh, we're going home," she announced,
holding out her hand to him. Mitch shot a glare at Wilhelm, who stood frowning, rubbing the sore spot in the hollow of his shoulder.
"Are you taking sensitivity training from Steiger in your spare time?"
"We're all stressed out," Wilhelm grumbled.
Ellen turned back to their window on the psychiatrist's office and watched through the smoky glass as Hannah knelt down to gather her son in her arms.
"Who can blame her?" she murmured to Cameron. "She's right. We didn't want this for Josh's sake. We wanted it to save our own hides. Sometimes I hate this job."
"For all we know, Wright beat us to this hypnosis thing," he said. "The man's a psychology professor, specializing in learning and perception. He might have wrung this kid's mind out like a sponge and put in whatever he wanted."
"There's a cheery thought," Ellen mumbled. "Think Dr. Freeman would give us a group rate?"
The session over, Dr. Freeman let herself into the room on their side of the glass. She offered no apologies and spared them none of her own feelings. She had felt it was too soon to try to pry into Josh's memories, and she had been right. He didn't trust her yet, and after this it would probably be some time before he would. Mitch ushered Hannah and Josh out to his truck. Wilhelm climbed into his car alone and headed across town toward St. Paul and a meeting with Bruce DePalma, his special agent in charge. Ellen crossed the parking lot with Cameron.
"Think we should check my car for bombs before we get in?" he asked, only half-teasing.
"It wasn't a bomb. It was just a flaming rag stuffed into the gas tank."
"Just?"
The end result was the same. The Cadillac was trashed. Poor Manley had been stunned, walking around and around the burnt-out hulk. Although he had perked up when the press had turned their attention on him, the prospect of more free advertising offsetting his grief. He had even gone so far as to offer Ellen another loaner, on camera. She had declined, saying instead that she would take her own car back as soon as his people could spray some primer over the damage to the driver's door. The worst thing was not knowing whether she was a target of Wright's supporters or Wright's accomplice, or both. And aside from scaring the shit out of her, whoever was responsible had managed to further disrupt her life and add to the already overwhelming burden of the case. She had planned to visit her parents after the session with Dr. Freeman. They lived just blocks away from Freeman's office, had called twice in the past week because they were concerned about her. But she had called them and canceled, not wanting to complicate Cameron's evening, and so he turned south on France Avenue and headed toward the freeway.
"Maybe it was just as well," Ellen mused, as they passed shopping centers and intersections that gave glimpses of quiet suburban neighborhoods. On the surface, a visit seemed to offer what she needed, support and sympathy. But what she was feeling couldn't be cured by going home, just as it hadn't been cured by leaving the cities 2 years ago, only put off for a time. She fought it now as it rose to the surface like oil, the fear that what she had walked away from when she had left the Hennepin County system wasn't just politics or disillusionment, but the knowledge of a world and a system in decay, and the knowledge that she was as much a part of the problem as she was disgusted by it. She thought of the many rape victims whose cases she had prosecuted over the years, the ordeal the system put them through, making them relive the crime over and over during the investigation and trial. It was no different now with Josh. He would be victimized all over again in the name of justice, and again in the name of therapy. His life had been violated,
and he and his mother would be put through hell by the people who were supposed to protect them and help them in order to get a conviction. For the first time in 2 years, she felt jaded and old, in a way that had nothing to do with her upcoming birthday. The feeling nagged her as they left the suburbs behind, and the view softened to the rumpled white blankets of farm fields and valleys shaded gray with naked woods. And as they neared Deer Lake, another eerie restlessness crept in as she looked off at the countryside. The idea that their nemesis was out there somewhere right now. That if they just turned down the right road, they might drive right past the house where Dustin Holloman was waiting to be rescued. Cameron took the exit at the Big Steer truck stop and rolled down the frontage road past Dylan Swede's A1 Auto and Manley's two biggest dealerships, where yellow ribbons had been tied to every car on the lots and the showroom windows had been painted with the slogan, "Bring Dustin Home." Even the giant inflatable blue gorilla that hovered above the roof of the Pontiac place had been adorned with a yellow ribbon, fluttering gaily around its neck. Driving through the streets of town, Ellen saw the same symbols over and over, the ribbons on the front doors meant to show support and, perhaps, to ward off the evil, the posters taped to store windows, the new banner the town council had hoisted across Main Street, "Protect Our Children." The plea struck Ellen as personal. The citizenry turned instantly to the police they otherwise seldom thought about, expecting the crime to be solved, regardless of the lack of clues. They turned to the court system they likely knew nothing about, calling for justice at all costs. The pressure of their silent demands settled on her shoulders, turning the muscles to rock. "Did you want to go back to the office?" Cameron asked. "We could try to contact some more of Wright's old chums." "I'll pass for once," Ellen said. "I think we've suffered enough for one day. All I want to do is get some sleep." "Yeah. I don't suppose you got much last night." "You don't know the half of it." It seemed impossible that she had spent the night with Brooks. It seemed impossible that she had let her guard down that much. And with J. Butler Brooks, of all men. But they had reached out to each other. And it had been incredible. And it was incredibly complicated. "Apparently Manley thinks you're cursed," Cameron said, pulling into Ellen's driveway beside the Bonneville. The driver's door wore a big splotch of gray primer where the word bitch had been. "Can you blame him? Frankly, I was afraid to have my car at his garage. I don't want to be responsible for his business going up in flames." "You're not responsible," Cameron reminded her. "You're the victim." "Be that as it may, I'm dangerous to know. Do you want me to come in with you?" "No." She nodded toward the gray sedan parked at the curb. "Mitch gave me a guard. I'll be fine. Thanks for the ride." "Try to stay out of trouble for a few hours," he said, offering her a gentle version of his teasing grin. "I'm going to bed early. How much trouble could I get into?" Visions of Jay's pirate smile rose in her memory as she drove the Bonneville into the garage. "God, Ellen," she mumbled as she hefted her briefcase out of the car. "Of all the lousy times to develop a libido."
"You won't hear me complaining."
She whirled around. Brooks came out of the shadows of the garage. He hadn't bothered to shave, apparently hadn't bothered to run more than his fingers through his hair. "Damn it," Ellen complained. "I'm not going to have to worry about Wright's accomplice getting me. You'll give me a heart attack first. What the hell are you doing in here?"
"I had my doubts about your surveillance team. Decided to test them for myself."
He reached out and took her briefcase from her.
"They failed."
"I can see that. How did you get in? Everything was locked." He pulled a credit card from his coat pocket and held it up.
"Don't leave home without it. I parked on the next block, cut through the alley, hopped your fence."
"And Harry?"
"Greeted me with tail wagging. He's not exactly Cujo."
He nodded toward the door that led directly from the garage to the backyard.
"You need a deadbolt there. I jimmied the lock with a credit card. Any two-bit burglar could do it."
"There's a comforting thought."
"Look on the bright side, sugar," he said,
following her into the house.
At least I was the one to show you your security shortcomings. The only thing I'm after is some wild, hot sex.
Oh, is that all?
You weren't so blasé last night.
Wicked Mischief lit his eyes as he planted a hand on either side of her and trapped her with her back against the wall.
As I recall, you said something more along the lines of, "All that, Jay?"
I was probably referring to the size of your ego. His grin deepened.
You're blushing, Counselor.
It's the sudden warmth.
Hear, hear.
He brushed his mouth across hers, his lips cold, his tongue warm, his gaze holding hers. Ellen's body responded to his as if they had spent years together, instead of just a night. It was a frightening thought, that they could be so in tune, that she could be so easily won over, that her body could so eagerly shut out her mind. She turned her face away.
I need to let Harry in.
She brought the dog in and gave him his supper. She could feel Jay watching her as she hung up her coat and turned up the thermostat. The quality of his gaze unnerved her. The intensity of it. The sense that he wasn't just watching her but observing her. Studying her. She drew a deep breath as she faced him. He had turned the fireplace on and stood with his back to it. In the deep shadows of the room, he looked like the kind of man no sane person would cross paths with. In another time, in another place, they would never have met. That was the bottom line.
"I've been thinking," she began, pacing nervously between the coffee table and the wing chair.
"Uh-oh."
Last night was incredible.
"But?"
"It can't happen again."
"Because?"
"Because everything. Because of the case. Because of who I am. Because of who you are."
"Those are all the reasons we're together."
"I know." She shook her head. "It can't work, Jay."
"It worked pretty damn good last night," he said, moving toward her.
Ellen held her ground.
"You know what I mean. I've got priorities."
"And I'm not one of them."
"Would you want to be? You've got priorities of your own. I doubt I'm one of them."
"Not so," he said. "I believe I made my interest in you clear from the first."
"Your interest in me as a player," Ellen clarified.
"You still don't trust me," he charged.
"You know the position I'm in," she said, stepping around the heart of the issue. "You were an attorney. You should know better than to take it personally."
"That's a little hard to do, all things considered," he said with a sarcastic laugh. "I thought we were past the cover-your-ass stage. You know, I've already seen yours from some very intimate angles."
"Thank you for pointing that out," Ellen said sharply, her temper fraying down to the nub. "Would you care to see it again, so you can describe it accurately in Chapter 19?
"Jesus Christ, you are so..."
He broke off, clamping his teeth down on his temper, reining back the wrong words before they could make a bad situation worse.
"Damn it, Ellen. Don't you know I wouldn't do anything to hurt you?"
"No, I don't know," she shot back. "I know you're the one who keeps warning me away and then pulling me back until I feel like a paddle ball. I know your stated purpose in coming to Deer Lake, and I've made it very clear that I hate it. I know you went to law school with Tony Costello, but you claim you don't know him. You pretend to be my friend, then get pissed off when I don't let you in on what you know damn well has to be confidential. You walk into my life out of the shadows like a stalker, then tell me you want to keep me safe. What the hell am I supposed to think about you?"
The question lay between them like a gauntlet. Ellen waited for him to take it up. Neither of them moved. He stood with his hands jammed at the waist of his jeans, eyes narrowed, mouth set in an uncompromising line.
"I've known you a week," she murmured. "A week. One of the worst damn weeks of my life. What am I supposed to think? That you're my hero? That I should trust you? Do you know what happened the last time I trusted a man who said he was my friend, who said he understood? He took that trust and used it. Used me to buy himself some power. A rapist walked free."
"Fitzpatrick," Jay whispered.
His victim was counting on my team. Art Fitzpatrick had destroyed her life, and he walked away from that like it was nothing, because I was stupid enough to trust the wrong man. Tuesday, I get to stand across a courtroom from that man, knowing he'll stop at nothing to get what he wants.
Costello.
He closed his eyes and muttered the name like a curse. The puzzle pieces he had been playing with for a week fell into place. He had known about the Fitzpatrick debacle, of course, but there had been no direct connection to Costello. Costello hadn't represented Fitzpatrick, but he sure as hell would have courted Fitzpatrick and his counsel for future reference, and he had gone through Ellen to do it. That son of a bitch. He'll do whatever he has to do to win a case, or anything else he happens to want.
Then did he want you? Is that what this is really all about, Ellen? Costello fucked you over figuratively and literally?
The words exchanged in anger Friday night came back to him now. Costello had betrayed Ellen, and Costello was here, Wright's attorney of choice, a choice made after Ellen had been given the case, a choice made after Jay himself had come into the picture. Christ almighty, no wonder she was paranoid.
And what do you do, Brooks? Jerk her around like a goddamn rag doll.
He had played on her emotions, purposely kept her off balance in the attempt to get what he wanted. The story, the inside track. The woman. This woman, who stood before him with her defenses worn thin, her pride held up like a shield. How's that for an extra twist to your plot, Mr. Brooks? She said bitterly. Maybe you'd rather write that story. Maybe you'd rather exploit those people, though I don't imagine sexually abusive corporate magnates sell as well as stolen children. You'd rather tap into that deeper vein of emotion. Hit us, where we'll all bleed. Well, congratulations, Jay. You managed to hit a double bullseye with me. You should be so proud.
Ellen, he began, reaching out toward her.
She stepped back from him, holding her hands up in front of her, warning him away. I think you should leave. The night is young. You can go home and write this little fight scene down while it's fresh in your mind. You can call Costello up and compare notes about my sexual performance. There's just nothing like first-hand experience when it comes to research, is there?
Stop it.
Don't give me orders in my own home, Brooks. I'll call that officer in here and have him throw your ass in jail. She would. Of that, Jay had little doubt. Ellen didn't make a bluff she wouldn't back up.
Ellen, I'm sorry. He offered. I'm a son of a bitch. I admit it.
And you think that somehow gives you license to go on being a son of a bitch? Ellen said, shaking her head in disbelief. As long as you warn people ahead of time, then they can't very well complain, can they? As long as you tell them up front you came to use them.
I didn't come here to use you.
Didn't you? Do you even know the difference anymore? You tell me last night didn't have anything to do with the case, but you turn around and use it against me in thinly veiled threats.
That's not true. You're twisting this out of proportion.
Am I? Let's see, she said with cutting sarcasm. Last night, we slept together. Today, I go to witness the hypnosis of my victim. And here you are tonight, looking for a little pillow talk and getting ugly when I tell you no. What does that add up to?
So much bullshit.
He snarled, annoyed with her assessment of his character, and angry because in his heart he knew she wasn't far wrong. He did want to know what had happened with Josh. He would have tried to get her to talk about it, but he didn't think of going to bed with her as part of the process, a sacrifice in the name of duty.
God!
You're no better than that reporter who was screwing Steiger, she said with disgust.
I do not prostitute myself for information.
Jay took a step toward her, and then another, backing her up until a wing chair stopped her.
I've said it before. What happens between us is between us. Maybe we met because of this case, but I sure as hell wasn't thinking about the case last night. I was thinking about how hot you were, how soft, how tight you were around me.
With every word, his voice dropped and softened. He leaned closer and closer until they were nearly belly to belly, thigh to thigh.
What we had last night wasn't about the case, he murmured. You know damn well it wasn't.
She almost wished it had been. But there was no call for righteous indignation. She was a grown woman who had made a choice. He hadn't seduced her. He had needed her, and she had wanted him, and a part of her wanted him even now.
You're a woman, Ellen. You're not this case. You can't just let it swallow you whole. Isn't that what you wanted away from?
Yes. But where did she draw the line? And where did he? Where did the case end and their personal lives begin? Could the two even be separated, or were they as hopelessly intertwined as everything else in this web? The choice doesn't seem to be mine to make this time, she said sadly. I walked away from it once, but the evil came to me this time, to this place. Costello came here. You, the media, Hannah's turned to me, and Josh, and the people I work with, and the people I work for. She forced half a smile, half a laugh. I'm surrounded.
I'm not the enemy, Ellen.
No, he was one of those mythical creatures, sometimes good, sometimes bad, always shadowed and mysterious, his role unclear until the end of the story. You know what I'm dealing with, she said. It's up to me to get justice for these people. This is the toughest case I've faced in my career, and I'm rusty, and it scares the hell out of me that this son of a bitch might just outsmart me and walk. And you just show up on my doorstep because you want to have sex.
I came over here because I was concerned about you, Ellen, Jay said stubbornly, and I'm not leaving.
The steel in his tone made her eyes widen. Excuse me?
Jesus, Ellen. Someone blew up your damn car. You've been threatened. You've been singled out for attention from this lunatic and his pals, and you've got Barney fucking Fife parked in front of your house. If I can get in here without his knowing, your nemesis sure as hell can. I'm not leaving. I don't want to see you get hurt.
He didn't want to see her get hurt. But he would hurt her himself. He would be a villain in one sense or another. He would write about this case, turn it into a diversion to be read and tossed aside and left on airplanes. He would reduce her to a character, and Hannah and Josh, and Mitch and Megan. He would take what he wanted from this and leave. He had given her a part of himself, but he would still leave. Point taken, she said, and I appreciate the thought. I'll have that deadbolt installed first thing tomorrow.
And tonight?
I'll take my chances.
No, he argued. A chance is the last thing you're willing to take. It's smarter to walk away, play it safe. You got burned once, why risk it again?
I took a big chance last night.
And now you regret it.
No, Ellen admitted. I just see the wisdom in not taking it again. Jay studied her face for a long moment. The honesty, the resolve, the regret for this moment, if not for the night they had spent in each other's arms. He might have tried harder to change her mind. He might have seduced her. But then every rotten thought she had about him would have been true. And for the first time in a long time, someone else's opinion mattered to him. For the first time in forever, he caught himself wanting to be something he wasn't. Noble. Life had become too damn complicated. Please, Jay, Ellen murmured. It's not that I don't want to. I just can't. Not now. I'll have the officer come in and spend the night on the couch. Please go.
You'd rather have some fat old cop eating donuts on your sofa than have me in your bed? Christ.
No, but it's for the best. She handed him his coat and started up the steps for the dining room. I wish things could be different, but the case is the case and I am who I am, and you are who you are.
And I'm no damn good for you, he said. Well, sugar, that isn't exactly headline news.
Maybe after this is all over, Ellen began, but she stopped herself. What was the point in saying it? They had shared a night and made no promises. Say good night, Ellen, she ordered herself.
Good night, Ellen,
he echoed, lowering his mouth to hers. He kissed her slowly, deeply.
If you decide to take that chance, counselor, he whispered, you know where to find me.
Then he slipped out the door. Ellen stood at the storm door until the glass frosted over and the cold chilled the heat of need on her skin. But the heavy sense of yearning, of regret, remained as she took her briefcase to bed. Chapter 28 Monday morning brought an article in the Pioneer Press about the harassment of the sci-fi cowboys, phone calls from the mayor, two state senators, and three congressmen, and the threat of a lawsuit. Rudy darkened Ellen's office door before her first cup of coffee could turn cold. They have no grounds for a lawsuit, Ellen assured him, rubbing a smudge of fingerprint dust from the gooseneck of her lamp. Priest has his nose out of joint because his pets might turn out to be bad boys after all. Mitch had good cause to haul those kids in and question them. Rudy had somehow managed to tie his necktie over the top of one collar point. Green and yellow, it looked like an oversized garter snake trying to choke him. Ellen, that program has garnered national attention. Do you have any idea of the people who back it? People with money. People with clout on the local and state levels. People Rudy had sucked up to, or would, at some point in his career.
I endorsed it myself.
Stopping by her window, he looked out, as if he expected an angry mob to be clamoring at the steps. He pulled a roll of Tums out of his pants pocket, thumbed off two, and popped them into his mouth. It's a fine program, Ellen said. It wouldn't be your fault if it turned out to have some rotten apples in the barrel.
We can't have them suing the county attorney's office, for God's sake.
They're making noise, that's all.
Can't you make a statement of some kind, placate them?
Ellen bit down on a rebuke of his cowardice. Rudy, I have every reason to believe those kids torched that Cadillac. I will not placate them. And what if it turns out Priest is involved with Wright in the kidnappings?
He passed the polygraph. He was in St. Peter when O'Malley was attacked.
We know Wright is the one who attacked Megan. That doesn't absolve Priest of guilt. He could be making this stink now for the sole purpose of getting us to back off so he can have room to maneuver.
Good grief!
Ellen watched him stroke his hand back over his steel-wool hair. She could all but hear the oily wheels of his mind spinning as he tried to sort the dilemma into an order from which he could somehow benefit. Relax, she said. The public will side with Priest. Sig Iverson will side with Priest. You can remain safely neutral. I'm the bad guy. You can't lose, Rudy. Unless, of course, Priest turns out to be a kidnapper and the sci-fi cowboys fried that car. She almost laughed, as his face contorted through a full range of expressions from relief to panic. He couldn't seem to decide which one to settle on. You can make the statement, she said. Stepping up to him, she reached up and tugged his collar free of his tie. No comment regarding ongoing investigations. You have confidence in my abilities. This said with a grave expression that might leave room for doubt. Same old non-committal song and dance. Fred Astaire couldn't do it any better than you, Rudy.
He scowled at her askance as he tried to catch his reflection in the glass of a framed certificate hanging on the wall. You know that smart tongue won't do you any good when you run for office, he said, snugging the knot in his tie.
For the millionth time, I have no intention of running for office.
He listened as well as he ever did. Where is J. Butler Brooks? He asked testily. I thought he'd be in the offices more. I want to sell him on an idea for a book.
Your life story?
Career of country lawyer, he said, dead serious. I faced some fascinating cases in my day, like the time the Warnicke brothers tipped a cow onto their hired man. It seemed like an accident, but...
You know, Rudy, Ellen said, tapping a finger against her watch, I'm sure it's the stuff of a blockbuster, but I've got to be in Grabko's chambers in 5 minutes. He's ruling on Josh Kirkwood's medical records. I'll update you later.
She hurried out of the office,
pausing by Phoebe's desk only long enough to instruct her to lock up after Rudy. She took a back staircase to avoid reporters and had to squeeze her way around workmen's scaffolding, swearing under her breath as plaster dust rained down on her, dotting her navy blue blazer like talcum powder. Brushing away the residue, she slipped past the law library and ducked behind a granite column to scope out the situation in the main hall. Family court was in session. The hall in front of what had been Judge Franken's courtroom was clogged with kids and husbands and wives glaring at one another, county social workers and attorneys, all waiting their turn before the substitute judge the district had sent. Beyond them, milling around Judge Grabko's door and spilling out onto the rotunda balcony, were the esteemed members of the press, waiting to catch first word of Grabko's ruling. Waiting to catch me, Ellen thought. They were steamed that the Pioneer Press had scooped them all on the interview with Christopher Priest, and they would take it out on her.
I'll run interference if you give me an exclusive.
Ellen jerked around. Adam Slater had slipped up behind her and stood close enough to touch. Dressed in grunge flannel and a letterman's jacket, he could have easily blended into the family court crowd. His hair swung down into his eyes as he made a show of licking the tip of his pencil and poising it above his reporter's notebook.
You just don't give up, do you? It's a common misconception that Generation Xers have no focus. So are you really going after the sci-fi cowboys? They're supposed to be the big success story. Bad boys turned good, snatched from the jaws of sociopathy, and trained to use their powers for the good of mankind. That's what everyone believes. Notable exception, you.
It's a wonderful program, Ellen said by rote. I hope it turns out the boys had nothing to do with the explosion.
And the kidnappings?
No one ever said they were suspects in the kidnappings. She shot a nervous glance toward Grabko's door and the crowd in front of it. The native seemed to be growing restless, and there was no sign of Costello. He had either sneaked in early or was waiting to make his entrance. She was screwed either way. Should have brought a deputy with me. Routine background checks are being run on all of Dr. Wright's close friends and associates, she said. Now, I've got to be in judge's chambers, Mr. Slater. I held up my end of the bargain. It's your turn. He scribbled a last line in his notebook, then tucked it into an inside coat pocket and slicked his hair back. No sweat, Ms. North. He strutted off toward the family court crowd, drawing a bead on Quentin Adler.
Hey, Curly!
He bellowed, thrusting an accusatory finger in Quentin's face.
You and me gotta have some words, man. You screwed me over!
Quentin nearly gave himself a whiplash, looking to one side and the other for a more likely target than himself.
Me?
He squeaked, color crawling up his neck. Slater jabbed him in the sternum with his finger.
Those charges were like so bogus!
His voice rang off the walls, drawing the attention of the bored reporters. He backed Quentin toward them as he ranted on, backed him toward the open area around the balcony, giving Ellen a route along the wall. She took it, head down, hustling toward the side door to Grabko's chambers. By the time anyone caught sight of her, she was able to throw out a handful of no comments and duck into the outer office.
"It's all in the wrist, Mr. Costello," Grabko said, demonstrating his casting move in slow motion.
Costello stood beside him, looking like an ad for GQ in a pearl-gray suit that was worth a month of Ellen's salary. His shirt was as white as an angel's wings, his tie perfectly knotted. It was difficult to imagine he and Rudy Stovich belonged to the same species.
"As in so many aspects of life," Grabko preached, "success in fly fishing is a matter of concentration, logic, and grace."
"And me without my waders," Ellen muttered, skewering Costello with a look. He gave her a smile that was all too generous. With great care, Grabko set his rod into a carved walnut wall rack.
"Do you fish, Ellen?"
"Only in the metaphorical sense," she said, sliding into a chair.
"Catch anything, Tony?"
she asked under her breath as he settled into the chair beside her.
"That remains to be seen," he murmured.
The judge sank down into the pillow softness of his leather chair, straightened his red-striped bow tie, and immediately began to pet his beard, stroking it like a cat. His gaze fell on Ellen with fatherly concern.
"I hear we're lucky to have you among the living, Ellen."
"I don't believe it was an attempt on my life, Your Honor. Just a warning."
"Dr. Wright was disturbed to hear about it," Costello said.
"That my car blew up, or that I wasn't in it at the time?"
"You'd be surprised at his concern, Ellen."
"Yes, I would be, seeing as how I have every intention of putting him behind bars for the rest of his life."
"He's also concerned about the allegations against the Sci-Fi Cowboys. He doesn't want to see the program suffer because of its ties to him."
"If the program suffers, it's because of the attitudes of the individuals involved," Ellen said. "I think Dr. Wright and his colleagues may have overestimated a couple of their boys."
"Do you have any evidence against the young men?" Grabko asked.
"Nothing solid at this point. The police and the BCA are working on it, but they're being spread thin these days. Thanks to your client and his friends," she said, turning back to Costello. He shook off the responsibility.
"My client is an innocent man. Our case will speak for itself."
"Which brings us to the business of the day," Grabko said. He tapped the cover of a red file folder sitting squarely on his blotter. "Josh Kirkwood's medical records. I spent a good deal of time looking them over." Ellen pulled in a breath and held it. "Parental child abuse is a horrible crime, one we seldom suspect in a family like the Kirkwoods. A dangerous oversight on our part. Abuse knows no socioeconomic barriers."
"Our point exactly, Your Honor," Costello said, leaning forward in his chair.
"However," he drew the words out, savoring his moment, "I found nothing in Josh Kirkwood's records that could be construed as out of the ordinary or as being relevant to the case." The breath sighed out of Ellen. "Just as we expected all along." Costello gave a subtle shrug. "You win some, you lose some." He had got what he wanted out of the play. Media attention. The opportunity to sow the seeds of doubt.
"I suppose I shouldn't be surprised," Costello said. "Hannah Garrison is head of the ER at the hospital where Josh has been treated. Well-respected, well-liked, the kind of woman who might be able to persuade a fellow doctor or nurse to see an incident her way."
"And convince them to falsify records?" Ellen said. After everything she had seen Hannah put through, she could have throttled Costello for taking this tack. "Watch where you're stepping, Tony. You're about to put your handmade Italian loafer in a big hot pile."
"I'm not trying to portray the mother as the villain," he defended himself. "The husband is emotionally abusive and manipulative. He coerced her or convinced her."
"And maybe there's life on Uranus, but your speculation on that subject isn't admissible either," Ellen said sharply. "The issue at hand is the medical records. You're dead in the water, Tony. Let's move on."
"Fine."
He reached into his briefcase and pulled out a document.
"Motion to dismiss."
"And our argument against dismissal," Ellen said, handing over Cameron's brief. Grabko accepted the paperwork, with a satisfied glow of a teacher taking extra credit projects from his favorite students.
"And," Costello said, pulling another rabbit from his hat, "in the event we do proceed, motion to suppress the lineup ID."
Ellen jerked around in her chair, gaping at him.
"What? On what grounds? That was a perfectly good by-the-book lineup."
She turned to Grabko. "Your Honor, great pains were taken to ensure the fairness of that lineup."
"You were there, Ellen?"
"No. Mr. Stovich oversaw the process personally, but I've spoken with all parties involved."
Costello handed the motion to Grabko.
"Then you should be aware of the fact that Dr. Wright's attorney was barred from the room where Mrs. Cooper filled out her written report."
"Barred?"
Ellen said, incredulous.
"I hardly think so. Dennis Enberg was present at the lineup. If he wasn't in the room when Mrs. Cooper filled out the paperwork, it was his own choice."
"That's not the way I hear it."
"From who?"
"From my client."
"Oh, there's a reliable source. a psychopathic child stealer.
And from Mrs. Cooper herself. Her affidavit is attached, Your Honor.
I'd like a copy of that, if you don't mind, Ellen snapped.
Costello permitted himself the tiniest of smiles.
Of course, Ellen. You did specify your office wanted everything in writing and handled through the proper channels. I've sent your copies over via messenger.
Fury burned in Ellen's cheeks. She glared at him and mouthed, "You son of a bitch." The smugness in his expression made her want to choke, particularly because she knew its origin. He had turned her own trick back on her. In the normal course of events around a rural courthouse, challenges were made over the phone, or hashed out in person. Formalities were waived. She had imposed by-the-book standards on Costello to punish him, to slow him down, to irritate him. And here she sat.
"And what kind of messenger did you send? A dog team via Winnipeg?" she said sarcastically. "I should have been notified about this Friday at the latest."
Manufacturing a look of abject innocence, Costello directed his explanation at Grabko.
"We weren't able to contact Mrs. Cooper until Friday afternoon, Your Honor, with the time constraints."
"Cheerfully accepted by you, Mr. Costello," Ellen pointed out.
He ignored her.
"We're doing the best we can, Your Honor, and we are thoroughly prepared for the hearing. We hoped you'd be lenient with regards to service of this motion, all things considered."
The judge tugged at the white spot in his beard, looking grave.
"I can't disregard the motion, considering its gravity. And I do feel the circumstances can be considered good cause to make an exception to the general rule. Ellen, if you feel this upsets the balance, if you feel you need more time..."
"No, Your Honor," she said tightly. "We're ready. I just don't appreciate being ambushed, especially with something as groundless as this."
"Why don't we let the judge decide the merits of the motion, Ellen?" Costello suggested in a patronizing tone.
Grabko perched a pair of reading glasses on his nose and turned to the affidavit.
"According to Mrs. Cooper, Mr. Enberg expressed an interest in coming into the room where she was filling out her report, but one of three officers present in the room turned him away, then followed him out."
"I don't believe it," Ellen challenged. "What officer? Let's get him in here."
Costello huffed a laugh.
"I'm sure he'll tell us the truth when he sees what's riding on his story. Every cop in town wants to see my client publicly hanged. Mrs. Cooper is the only impartial witness to what happened."
Dennis Enberg would never have allowed himself to be barred from the room if he had wanted to be present, Ellen argued.
"He's not here to tell us that, though, is he, Ellen?"
"Yeah, what a lucky stroke for you, Tony," she said, her words dripping venom. "Right about now, Denny is on a stainless steel table at Hennepin County Medical Center, getting himself sawed in half by a medical examiner."
"Ellen, please,"
Grabko chastised her.
"I'll call the officer in, and I'll speak with Mr. Stovich. But as Mr. Enberg isn't able to speak for himself on the matter, I have to concur with Mr. Costello. Mrs. Cooper is the least biased of all involved parties."
"But, Your Honor, Mrs. Cooper never mentioned this when I spoke with her."
"Did you ask her specifically?"
"I had no reason to ask such a question. We spoke at length about the lineup procedure."
"And she had no reason to think anything was out of the ordinary," Costello said. "She isn't an attorney. She isn't a police officer. She had no way of knowing proper procedure. She trusted the police to conduct themselves properly, and they betrayed that trust."
"I'm sure that's what you led her to believe," Ellen sneered.
"That's enough, Ellen."
Grabko set the affidavit aside.
"I'll speak to all parties involved and come to a decision. Is there anything more we need to discuss today?"
Costello lifted his hands.
"Nothing further, Your Honor."
"No, sir,"
Ellen said grudgingly.
"Fine," Grabko said, straightening the stack of documents. "I'll see you both here tomorrow morning."
"You really are a sleaze, Tony,"
Ellen muttered as they left Grabko's chambers for the outer office. His secretary had vanished, leaving them alone.
"Why?"
Costello pulled up short of the hall door and faced her, standing close enough for confidentiality.
"Because I'm doing my job? Because I don't believe my client is guilty?"
"You don't give a damn if he is.
You play this system like a pick-up soccer game. Nothing matters except that you win. You trick my witness into doing your dirty work for you. You call Josh Kirkwood's father a child abuser and impugn the reputation of his mother. If you publicly accuse Hannah Garrison of falsifying those medical records, I hope she sues your ass 8 ways from Sunday. He made a pretense of being hurt.
That's not a very charitable sentiment toward someone who is genuinely concerned for your safety, Ellen. You could have been killed in that car.
Is that your unbiased opinion, or do you know something the rest of us don't?
Yes, Ellen. I am not